of cream, red roses too.
And welcome to Global Radio Talk Show. This is Ed Cohen, editor of Global Business News and your broadcast host on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com. Our guest today is very special, Dr. Bill Powers, Senior Advisor, National Protection and Programs Directorate of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Let's say hello to Dr. Powers.
Hi. Thank you very much for the opportunity to join you today. I appreciate it.
Really honored to have you and DHS involved here. So let's get right into this. Of course, DHS is a large organization, isn't it?
It truly is. We're the third largest cabinet-level organization in the federal government, and we've truly transformed our mission set from evolved from the attacks of 9/11 to become a very broad, in-nature scope organization with a multitude of responsibilities that range from emergency management to customs and border, immigration, cybersecurity, infrastructure protection, global health, those types of activities. We really are an enormous organization with an extraordinary mission.
Okay, so not everybody who works there are spies and spooks, I know that, but your role in particular, and I say that with tongue-in-cheek, of course, but I would like you to explain who works there and what are some of the jobs, of course, but more so, your role, Dr. Powers, as a senior advisor has to do with organization development and human resource stuff, doesn't it?
It's actually spun off to include some of the workforce engagement strategies that you're alluding to. In my role, I actually work for the Business Continuity and Emergency Preparedness function of the National Protection Programs Directorate. We are responsible for how we maintain government operations and continuity of operations in the event of an anomaly. And that anomaly could be something as simple or as minute as a snow event or a tornado type of event that impacts our region, to something more broad, such as an Ebola event or a pandemic event or an anthrax type of event. And our mission is really designed to focus on how we continue the operations of our organization's mission in the event of adversity. From that was born some of the opportunities that we're discussing today, which is some of the workforce engagement strategies. When we discuss continuity of government, my role was to develop plans, programs, policies, protocols on how we would continue a maintenance of operation of government services. And that has evolved to become a business driver application of how we can use some of those resiliency applications in more of a holistic application, how we can use telework, mobility work solutions, flexibility, work-life balance programs to become a cost-driving mechanism to recruit, retain, transfer knowledge amongst generations, reduce some of our greenhouse gas emissions, some of our physical footprint costs, some of the reductions that we can explore from reduced commuting times, and use those as drivers to help enhance our workforce ability to apply anytime, anywhere work solutions. From that has really opened up a very candid dialogue, interagency as well as the entire federal government, as we start to partner with state and local partners on best practices on how we can use workforce engagement strategies in that very non-traditional sense to, again, start becoming a cost driver for the way we do business.
Let's talk about the workplace, the federal workplace, and the workplace of tomorrow. What transformational work strategies are required to be a part of C-suite level planning as influences how the workplace of tomorrow is being shaped?
So the workforce of tomorrow, make no mistake about it, is something that we must evolve towards now to impact tomorrow. No longer can we accept the fact that a workforce is going to commit to a particular organization or particular sectors for an entire career. Data trends will exploit that. By the time most people are 30 years old, they will have had 6 to 8 jobs. How does that transform and comport over to how the federal workforce landscape is evolving and changing of tomorrow? If we don't start transforming the way we do business now, we're going to have a very relevant shift in our ability to conduct operations tomorrow. So the workforce at the federal level of tomorrow has to start addressing the needs of what the workforce trends are saying today. And what the workforce trends are telling us are people want to have me-first capabilities. And a lot of people get very uncomfortable when they start talking about a me-first generation. And they shouldn't get uncomfortable. It is a very different paradigm of how we approach the way we manage a workforce, but it's not unapproachable and it's not non-effective. When we talk about a me workforce, that a millennial workforce or the tech generation workforce, we're talking about a generation of talent that is driven to meet their personal needs first. That's okay. And the workforce does not suffer as a result of that. It just means that we differ our approaches to meeting the workforce mission. Ways that we can do that is providing opportunities for a varied work structure. What says that you have to show up at 8 a.m. and work until 5 p.m., have a one-hour lunch to be productive in any sector, the federal government excluded? When we start to ask the questions why those norms are acceptable or comportable to every sector and every job, then we can start to peel back the onion layer and say, let's start to explore ways that we can say, instead of working 8 to 5, if you're most productive from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m., let's move towards a time-based continuum of evaluation to a performance-based continuum of application. And when you start to do things in that realm and start to view it from that lens, then you can start to attract or recruit a generation that wants to be able to have their social network first and a career second. If we don't start making those accommodations, we're not going to maintain ourselves as an employer of choice. And then we get caught up in the attrition cycle, but we also get caught up in the talent cycle, where if we're not offering those types of accommodations, that talent will walk down the block to an organization in the private or public or private nonprofit sector that will provide them those accommodations. And work-life balance has so many facets, more than we can discuss in our interview today, but it's about giving back time and giving back level of energy to the generation that is saying, I can do more with less in a more sustainable fashion than the generation before me did.
So we're talking about technology, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and how it drives younger people.
Absolutely. And I'll use myself as the example. I telecommute a couple of days a week, and I have a second generation living in my home that I'm helping to care for in their elder age. And like I think most people of a baby boomer or older generation would imply or assume, that when you're teleworking, you're really not doing a whole lot. And when my in-laws moved in with me, they finally had a in-your-face opportunity to see just how engaged I can employ technology to become effective anytime, anywhere. And it doesn't mean that I'm defined on a productivity scale by where I'm working from versus what I'm working on. When they come to my basement office and they see two laptop computers, a cell phone, a BlackBerry, or a mobile device all in operation, that's what we're talking about. And when we start to embrace the use of technology platforms as a driver for employee engagement, it's a win-win situation.
Okay, so about mobility, talent mobility, that sort of means having the right people in the best position or the most appropriate position, right time, right price. Can you talk about flexible work solutions?
So what does flexibility offer? In something that is staring you right in the face, it offers you an ability to be able to take your 10-year kid's soccer game. But beyond that, what does it allow you to do? From an employer standpoint and from an opportunity of choice, it allows us to expand our recruitment and retention tools to move away from a geographic centricity to now opening up a position where we have national talent or even global talent, because the technologies exist for us to now advertise for a position that is not requiring the right person for the right job and the right fit to live in a specific geographic location. Perhaps that best candidate lives in California, but is assigned to Washington, D.C., or perhaps they live in Bangkok, Thailand. What prohibits us from using technology to hire the right person? I would infer that there are no limits. The technology now exists that we can have anytime, anywhere work force to align with the work product. And we're starting to see some of these trends evolve in different cabinet-level agencies and departments in the federal government where we're no longer restricted by geographic location to hire the right person. And mobility trends and the flexible work solutions have sparked that opportunity, and it's now starting to evolve and gain more traction. And that's where it's exciting to be part of a transformational change within the federal government to see that we're no longer constrained by, again, those geographic centricities to have the right person in the right job. As I think those trends continue to evolve, we're going to see lower attrition, we're going to see higher recruitment numbers, and that's where the intangible accounting aspects start to yield a return on investment for the organization. When we're no longer spending 1.5 times a federal employee's salary to recruit and retain those employees that are turning over, in some cases in departments, 30% annually. As a taxpayer, that resonates. It resonates when you start to extrapolate that by hundreds of thousands of employees over a cycle of 10 years. That's an extraordinary cost savings to the federal government. And that's where it becomes exciting to talk about this type of activity.
It's fascinating to listen to this, frankly, and to learn about this aspect from the inside at your level. And so a lot has to do with management then, right? Management has to accept telecommuting. It has to accept not having that person under their physical control, if you will, down the hall and in that cubicle or in that office over there on the floor, but across the world perhaps. So the bosses are changing, is that correct? Or how much time and effort are you putting into training the trainers, training the bosses?
So twofold question. The first part of your question is, without question, this requires a varied level of management. I would offer and submit that it's not a new paradigm of management. And what I mean by that is a manager is required to manage. And if you're not able to effectively manage a cadre of traditional level employees, you are not going to be qualified to manage a virtual employee workforce. And the argument and the example that I would offer and hear at a lot of conferences and try to exhibit is there is a workforce level of management that would accept that if you show up every day from 8 to 5 and I can see you, I can manage you type of approaches, they're sadly being wooed into a level of comfort that does not exist. I think we can all relate to examples of employees, and I would use my area in the National Capital Region as one of them, where an employee may roll in at 9 a.m. or 9:30 a.m. an hour late and say, wow, that traffic was really bad this morning. I'm late because of that traffic. When they roll in, they drop their coat, their purse, briefcase, and off to grab coffee for 45 minutes. When they get back, it's catching up on their personal email, their Facebook accounts, they're shopping on Amazon.com, they're returning phone calls, they're talking about their son's soccer game, their daughter's ballet recital, and by 11:30, you may get an hour's worth of productivity out of them before they're heading off to an hour lunch. When they get back in the afternoon, now it's a pick-me-up break to go to Starbucks and grab a coffee. It's, again, more banter about the golf trip that you're going to be attending in the Outer Banks the upcoming week, your upcoming vacation, look at my photos, those types of activities. Just because you're in the office does not equate to productivity. And if a manager is not keenly astute to recognize that those types of things take place in the traditional setting and automatically assume that a virtual employee is not being productive because I can't see them, then I would use that example that I just gave you. So coming back to management 101, how do we manage? It can't be a time continuum. It has to evolve to become a productivity outcome-based evaluation tool. And it's amplified when you talk about a virtual workforce. How do you manage virtual teams? And it isn't about if so-and-so is available from 8 to 5. It's here's the product, here's the task we're working on, here's the deliverables. Are we working towards that, meeting those objectives, meeting the goals, having regular and recurring meetings, virtual conference calls, WebEx, those types of activities to move that ball down the field? How are we training and equipping our managers to evolve into managing a virtual workforce? Is something that we're not spending enough time, energy, and effort and resources to do. But I would again submit that it's not a variant management perspective as much as it is a comfort level of perspective. And as we start to foster and grow a younger workforce into management roles that are more adept, more astute and familiar with the technology, it becomes easier for them to manage a virtual employee when they're more familiar with the technology trends and the resources available. As we continue to have this dialogue and discussion, my message that I herald to acquisition managers and leaders is we have to equip more time, energy, and effort into aligning the technology and training to the technology so the managers become aware of the applications as they acquiesce into using those tools and resources to become better managers in the virtual realm.
So looking at the future, as we come to a close now, and in summary, in looking at the federal workplace in the new year, what's the major program that you have right in front of you?
The major initiative, something that I'm getting ready to step out and partner with the Office of Management and Budget with, is developing a workforce strategy that's going to be entitled Workforce 2025 and coming up with tangent, cogent work solutions that will influence how we become or retain once again, how the federal government is once again going to become an employer of choice. And why is that important? It's important because the employee viewpoint surveys and the trends are showing that the federal government has lost that ability to become the employer of choice. And why is that? There's a host of arenas, but this Workforce 2025 trends will start to address some of those concerns using some of the data analytics of what industry trends are showing us, what the needs are of the workforce that is coming up behind the retiring workforce, and make some cogent recommendations to Congress that we might start to amplify how we, again, codify that knowledge, how we recruit, how we retain the knowledge once we get it, so we avert some of those atrocities and turnover that we've been experiencing over the last several years. Those are things that we have to absolutely get in a room and start talking about now if we're going to avert a crisis of the future. And we're very close to coming to a crisis mode. The workforce trends are showing us that baby boomers are retiring three times at the rate of a millennial to replace them. When you start talking about the knowledge and putting an application or a dollar value to that knowledge that goes out the door versus the talent coming in to replace them, that can't be that's not being measured, and I would suggest that right now it can't be measured because we haven't yet started to have the dialogue around what the problem is. This initiative will absolutely energize us in 2015 and beyond on how we can start putting measures and mechanisms in place now to avert the crisis of the future.
Thank you, sir. We've been talking with Dr. Bill Powers, Senior Advisor, National Protection and Programs Directorate of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. He's in Washington, D.C., and this is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net, signing off today from Old Town in San Diego. Thank you, Doctor.
You bet.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful